The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic, the Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time, the Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station, and the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials. You can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Friday, February 21st, 2025, and this is episode number 76. On today's show, we'll be talking about Rivian posting its first gross profit, Kia's EV4 revealed in two configurations, and Jordan from Outer Spec drives the new Hyundai Ioniq 5 XRT. And of course, much, much more in the next 90 minutes. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the international man of mystery, Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic, and our special guest today, although keen viewers will notice, not in the stream just yet. Jordan Schaefer joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Gentlemen, welcome. Dear audience, thank you very much. We're a couple
gentlemen?
Of minutes late getting started, but that's probably my fault. Where's Super Mario in the comments says, Martin's still sleeping in. I'm 5 hours ahead of these guys, my friend, although I was just in the shower because I didn't shower till 2 o'clock this afternoon because I got kids and it was one of those mornings. One of those, here's breakfast, kids, and I don't want to eat this, Dad. What else have you got kind of mornings? I'm tempted to be like, that's all that's on offer. Like, it's that or nothing. But I'm a walkover so that I get him something else. Let's talk a little bit about what we've been up to this week in a very busy week. Well, first of all, Tom, last week we saw that your car got hit. Now that you've put together a proper video showing all the damage and talking about the course of action that happens next, it's our worst nightmare for all of us, of course, having our electric vehicles damaged. Fortunately, no humans were, the most important thing. But what's the latest on your poor little Chevy Equinox EV, Tom?
Okay, so, yeah, there's an update. I did make a video, as you noted, last week. I did that as soon as the vehicle was hit. I, came home and quick made a video because I was going to be taking it to the shop pretty soon just to get it out of the driveway and get the ball rolling on getting it fixed. And in the video, I do overlook the fact that the rear wheel does not look right. That if you're watching on YouTube now in that video, that left rear wheel does look like it's pushed forward a little bit. So after I made the video quickly, push it out and everything, I started looking at it more, even climbed under a little bit in the garage, and I could see, the damage is worse than what I thought. That wheel is definitely messed up. So I took it to the body shop, and they came out just to look at it briefly and, you know, did a pretty good inspection, a first-off inspection. Was like, yeah, like this is not a quick, easy, you know, rear quarter panel, fix the bumper, put in some parking sensors. This is pretty extensive. You know, the whole right, left wheel assembly and suspension has to be replaced. And so you could see there in the video, it is pushed forward. If you were to go back and stop for a second, see how that front wheel is clearly not in the center of the wheel well. So that's a significant amount of damage there. This is not going to be a cheap fix. And the body shop is concerned about parts availability. They talk about, you know, whenever a car's a new car, it's not that it's an EV. It's, you know, been in production less than a year. So whenever cars are new, they always seem to have problems. So they started ahead looking into some of the parts they need. And they were able to secure, I know, the rear quarter panel and some other superficial pieces, but we're not sure about the suspension pieces they need yet. So this could be out of commission for a significant amount of time. I'll keep you updated.
Did you have it tow a trailer home, or did you think it was okay to drive on your initial inspection and you sort of drove the short journey home with it like that?
Yeah, so the place where it got hit was like 2 miles from my house.
Yeah.
So and they're all slow back roads, and I just drove nice and easy and slow, and really didn't notice much of a difference because the roads were icy.
Right.
And you know, yes, the car didn't feel 100% stable, but that's front wheel drive car, and it wasn't. But when I drove it to the body shop, I had already now realized that there's something wrong with the wheel. The body shop was like 11 miles from my house, or no, a little bit more, right. 15 or 16. As I drove it, I was like, oh yeah, the back's dancing, you know, like, right. You know, I got one wheel that wants to go one way and another wheel that wants to go another way. So,
yeah,
but that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, Simon says you now have rear wheel steering. Looking on the bright side of life there, yeah. Simon, I like it.
That's what it felt like. Lining. Yeah. So it's unfortunate. And I have, you know, since it's the other person's fault 100%, their insurance already offered me a rental car, which, yeah, I don't even know if I'm going to take them up on it because we've got the Lightning and the Rivian here and it's just me and Meredith. You don't need a third car. So I probably will pass on the rental, but I'm still touring around taking one just to see what they give me and maybe play around with it for a few days.
Yep. How does it work in the US? Do you have it all? Do the body shop invoice the insurance company, or do the insurance company get a quote and write you personally a check and you have to settle it? How does it work with claims?
Yeah, the insurance company will pay the auto body shop directly.
Same
if there's
here.
Any deductible or whatever, then, you know, then the owner gets involved. And since, like I said, this was not my fault at all, their insurance company is not the same as mine. They're paying the whole, picking up the whole thing. So, so that's where we're at now. Weeks at a minimum, I won't have the car.
Jordan, talking of scurrying home in the snow, Jordan from Out of Spec has joined us. Thank you very much. You didn't need to hurry on our behalf, but I'm glad you're back safely. Welcome to the podcast today, Jordan.
Thank you. Good to see you, gentlemen. Where's the fun in no hurrying? And everyone wants to know how the Model 3 rear-wheel drive does in the snow, so I have to, you know, find out.
So how did it do in the snow?
Oh, it's great. Trash control is great. I do have the sexy buttons enabled, so I should be able to enable drift mode, but it hasn't been working today, so I'm trying to figure out why that is, but still drifting a bit.
It's not a performance though, right?
No, but with sexy buttons, you can kind of, for lack of a better term, hack your any other Tesla. You can disable the front motor, disable the rear motor. You could do front wheel drive drifts if you have an all wheel drive. All sorts of fun things. So you can basically turn off trash control in my rear wheel drive. Mm. Yeah. So it's kind of silly. But with the Nokian snow tires, it's a controllable, fun little machine. Of course, no one's on the roads because everyone's terrified of the snow. So I felt pretty safe doing that.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we'll come to what you've been up to. Can't wait to hear, actually, your insights. But first of all, Tom, speaking of the Equinox, you did previously do some DC charge testing with it on DC chargers with different power ratings. So 150 kilowatts Electrify America versus Tesla superchargers and even some big boy EVgo ones as well. Videos up on State of Charge for everyone to watch. Remind us again what the max charging power is on the Equinox, Tom, and whether you saw much of a difference on those various chargers.
Yeah, so I did a 0 to 100 and a 20 to 80% charge recording for the Equinox way back when I first got it. And you, of course, you can't please everybody. Everyone's like, Tom, please 10 to 80. Don't worry about the 20 to 80 or the 0 to 100. Nobody charges like that. So, you know, which I understand 10 to 80 is kind of like the standard. And I was going to do that anyway. But I figured I'll do a little twist on it and I'll charge it from 10 to 80 on a variety of different chargers and then compare them. So I did one on a 250 kilowatt V3 Tesla supercharger with the adapter, one on a 350 kilowatt EVgo station and another one on a 150 kilowatt Electrify America DC fast charger. So I fully expected the Tesla charger and the EVgo charger to be like identical because they can both deliver the maximum power that the Equinox can accept, which is 500 amps for a very short period of time in the beginning of the charging curve, about 7.5 minutes. It'll take in 500 amps before it starts lowering. But the 150 kilowatt Electrify America DC fast charger, that's going to be limited to somewhere around 350 amps. So, and the interesting thing is I've noticed some of them, I've gotten even less. Some of them I've gotten just a little more than 300 amps. It's weird what they do. I guess they derate some of them. But in any event, that was the one that I was really curious about to see how it was going to perform. I know a lot of people will look at it and say, well, the Equinox's maximum DC fast charging rate is 150 kilowatts. So there's no reason for me to go to a DC fast charger that's higher powered than 150 kilowatts. But unfortunately, that's not how this all works. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's amps times volts. The Equinox has an extraordinarily low voltage battery pack. So it requires more amps to get to its maximum charging rate, and it requires 500 amps. And the 150 kilowatt DC fast chargers just can't deliver 500 amps. So you're going to charge slower on those, but how much slower? That's the question. And when, I don't know if you remember when the Equinox first came out, there were a lot of people reporting, oh my God, this thing's going to be terrible at 150 kilowatt DC fast chargers. I think Alex on Autos did a video who I love, Alex Dykes, great guy, but he was kind of beating the drum that, you know, you definitely don't want to go to 150 kilowatt DC fast charger. You're not going to get a lot of power. At least that was my interpretation of the video and the charts that he put out. So I compared them all here and 10 to 80% on the supercharger and the EVgo, as I thought, were virtually identical. They're about 45 seconds apart, but the supercharger actually finished up a little bit quicker because the Equinox derated a little earlier. If you're watching on YouTube now, you see the chart that's up on the screen. The right, perfect timing, right as that circle shows where the EVgo charger derated a couple of minutes sooner than the Tesla supercharger did there. And that's not the charger, that's the car. So they both follow the same pattern, the same charging curve. But I guess it was a little bit, the EVgo station had the Equinox just a little bit hotter, and it was charging. You see that blue line is a little bit higher than the supercharger line for the whole time that they were side by side. So it was pulling 4 or 5 more kilowatt than the supercharger was delivering. So that little difference there pretty much made the Equinox derate a little bit sooner. And so it finished, they both finished up, let's say 40 minutes. One was like 39 and a half minutes. One was like 40.25 seconds or something like that. And the Equinox chugging along on the 150 kilowatt DC fast charger at around 93 kilowatts. You see the black line, right? Just, it's almost like a perfectly straight line. It's like, I think 16 or 17% behind the other two chargers at like 50% state of charge. But then it catches up because you could see after the vehicle charges at a high rate for a while, it's going to derate. It dropped way down to like 60 something kilowatts, right? But the 150 kilowatt station's chugging along at 90, 93, 94. So what you're going to get here, and I think in the video, if we hold on, you're going to see it highlight next. There's the second half of the charging curve, the 150 kilowatt station is actually beating the EVgo and the Tesla supercharger. So it catches up and it finishes 10 to 80, only about 4.5 minutes longer. So it's interesting, you know, how this works. If you're going to plug in for, you know, 10 or 15, if you're going to plug in for under 10 minutes, the EVgo station is going to give you a couple percentage higher. If you're going to plug in for like 15, 20 minutes, Tesla and supercharger are definitely the way to go. The 150 kilowatt station is going to be like, you know, 30 or 40 miles behind you of range added. But if you're going to stay the whole time, it nearly doesn't matter. So that's what we got out of this. Interesting.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah, we love it. Yeah, that's the part now here is where I show you where the 150 kilowatt station is outperforming the other two. That right there.
Right, yeah.
And it's like half the charging session, just about.
Yeah. Before 50%.
Yeah. So it's, but you know, it's only 30%, Dom, but it's a longer time period because it's charging slower at that time. So it is about half the period. And here's where I bring up how the lead is at a certain period of time. It's 14% higher at 50%. But then when it finishes up, you know, it's not much. It's only a couple percent.
Yeah.
But this is a deep dive. There's a lot of charts and graphs in this video. If you guys like data, there's like a ton of charts and graphs comparing them. And then I do miles added per minute on all three, broken up into 10-minute blocks. And then how long it takes to add 50 miles, 100 miles, 150 miles, 200 miles, all that, how many minutes you have to wait on each one. There's a good graphic about that. If you screen forward just a little bit, you'll see there's like three blue blocks on the, keep going a little bit further. There's like, you'll see like three blue blocks right now. There you go. This really tells you on each one of the three chargers, how long you have to wait to add 50 miles, 100 miles, 150 miles, and 200 miles, whether you're going to use the EPA range rating as your metric or my 70 mile an hour highway range test as your metric. There's a lot of data. But something like this, you could print up. And I know a lot of my followers do. They tell me they take screenshots and throw it in the glove box so they don't have to think about it. When they pull up somewhere, they pull it out. They're like, okay, I'm going to need to be here about 18 minutes, you know?
Nice. So
it's useful. Yeah.
And why not let somebody else do the thinking for you? We like that. So good stuff. All right. Hey, look, Jordan, let's talk about what you were driving, which is the Hyundai Ioniq 5 XRT. So the vehicle is now rolling out of the factory near Savannah, Georgia. Number of changes, native NACS, of course. I've seen you do a native NACS video on a Ioniq 5 already recently, a couple of weeks ago. But this new trim level is geared for maybe light off-roading, perhaps persuading a few Subaru buyers over to a Hyundai Ioniq 5. What were your expectations, and you know, did it live up to them or disappoint you when you got to drive this car?
As you could tell by the footage, not entirely disappointing. It was pretty fun. I guess I would say soft roading is a good term for what this could do. Of course, a normal Ioniq 5 could do some soft roading. It is funny how many people buy SUVs and never take them off the tarmac. But I had a lot of fun with this video. I had a lot of fun with the car. I came into it thinking, okay, I also drove the Mach-E Rally on a rally circuit. How will this compare? Will this be worse because it is cheaper? But it's just a little bit of a different strategy. You know, Mach-E Rally is like top of the line Mustang Mach-E gone rally with a little bit of a lift, some different wheels and tires and body cladding. This does all that same stuff, minus the underbody shielding for the motors, which is an interesting omission, but maybe because of cost. And this is not the most premium trim. This is kind of like a SEL, more like with added, you know, body cladding and stuff. And even in the ending of the video, I had a Freudian slip calling it a Subaru because I just glanced at it and saw body cladding, and it's just that's where my head went.
Absolutely.
So it's really, really. If I had one of these, I'd have a funny custom license plate paying homage to some Subaru. But always interesting to see how they portray these cars when we go drive them. I thought it was going to be pretty ugly. I still think it kind of is, but it's also functional. It's not like added cladding for no specific reason. Like just the amount of rock chips already on my Model 3 bumper that would be avoided by having a bumper made of plastic like this. Sure, it looks ugly, but it actually is useful. And I thought it rode great. I mean, a lot of good things to say about it. It is still a good chunk of money. I mean, it is cheaper than the Mach-E Rally, but it is still more expensive than a lot of things. So it's not really the cheapest toy, but I wonder how they'll do in the pre-owned market, as I always do.
Okay, well, hang on there. That seems as good a place as any to take a quick break. And when we come back, lots more on the podcast. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Now, who do they want to buy this vehicle then? They would have talked about their target market when you went for the driving day and things like that. And are they going to sell many of these? Who's going to buy one of these?
I'm guessing 10 to 20% customers. 20 is actually probably too aggressive. I don't think it's going to sell super well, but I don't see that many Machi rallies. But when I do, it really makes my day better. Like it's just cool to see something like that on the road. So I'm hoping these sell well, and I will honestly recommend this to a lot of potential Ioniq 5 buyers because the added slight lift of the suspension, the smaller wheels with the bigger tires, it just rides better. It's more comfortable. Someone did ask about porpoising. I didn't really notice any real porpoising other than the road itself. Well, I guess not really a road. The desert track I was driving on had a lot of bumps, and it did seem like it settled itself really quite well, better than I expected. So I thought it rode pretty well, but there were just sometimes when it was a bit harsh, and that's just partially from I was in my head thinking Machi Rally, which of course has that magical Magna Ride suspension. This does not have something like that, but again, it's a bit cheaper. But I like this trend of wheel design, like the kind of pixelated, steely looking thing. We of course saw that this week on the Rivian Dune, which we might touch on later. But I'm a big fan of these designed wheels.
So nice. Do you know if it, with this extra higher suspension and everything, does it take any kind of a range hit?
So it is a 10-mile range hit from a comparable all-wheel drive SEL or Limited. So not really very not much, which was impressive. I was expecting maybe more, but the tires are a bit narrower than like the Limited. Later in the video, I park it next to a Limited and do full side-by-side everything, and you can see the improved approach and departure angles. You can see this one's just riding a little bit higher, and you can see how much narrower the tires are. So I thought it was intriguing, but I do wish, you know, being out in the desert, I was like, man, this would be great if this had ventilated seats. Like, I would prefer the Limited trim plus all this cladding stuff. I love a glass roof. Especially Ioniq 5 does it so well because it has an accordion design that closes it. And, you know, a lot of people when they get into a Tesla, they complain about the glass roof being just permanently glass, and what if they want it darker or cutting out some of the sun. So I think I would prefer a glass roof, but you know, we're not really in this age so much where you can customize every single bit of your car unless you're Porsche.
so you can't get the XRT with the glass roof at all?
No, it's just basically just another trim that really price-wise slots between SEL and Limited, and function-wise seems to be about that same level too. It was interesting, a little Easter egg. The XRT badge in the back is embossed in plastic, and their reasoning was because of just being better for the environment because it's fewer parts, I guess. So kind of interesting.
And anything else mechanically? Obviously, this is a little different mechanically than the rest of the Ioniq 5s coming out of Georgia. But, of course, native NACS on this, which you've talked about in a previous video when you did that supercharger test. Anything else, you know, mechanically different now that this one coming made in the U.S.?
Not really. It was interesting. This event was, you know, test driving the new refreshed Ioniq 5. But all the other trims don't seem to drive really any different. But it was, you know, they made a huge deal of adding the rear wiper, which a lot of current and previous Ioniq 5 owners have wanted. So that was them adhering to customer demand and wishes. And I used the heck out of it. I was driving a Limited up in the mountains with some rain and even light snow, using the wiper the whole time. I was off-road in the desert using the wiper the whole time. And I was like, wow, how did people live without this? So that was a great addition. And mechanically, XRT just has the suspension variations. And then technically not so much mechanic, but it has the terrain mode button in the middle lower section of the steering wheel, which adds the dry snow, mud, and sand modes, which unfortunately they didn't have an engineer there to actually explain exactly what they were doing, but they just said optimized for each of those environments. Each of those modes, it does split power 50-50 exactly, which I extrapolated, okay, so they're cutting power to the rear motor to make them both 75 kilowatt peak instead of having the 75 front, 164 kilowatt rear. So that way it's a bit more predictable and honestly handled really well. A couple of complaints people mentioned is I never tried it with charge control off, which is a fair point. I can't believe I didn't, but that wasn't necessarily the point. we've all driven Ioniq 5s without traction control and had fun. Well, I don't know about everyone, but I've done that and it's been fun. But like, the point is seeing how these modes are calibrated for their environments. So I thought it was fun off-road, but personally, I would love this for on-road too. I don't know about y'all's roads, but in Colorado, also in California where I was driving this, the roads are terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is just like, this just has built-in pothole protection, you know?
So when you're driving like across off-road, across that course there, does it feel like you just like, is it like banging, like the suspension? Is it like banging and clanging, or does it feel, I know it's not MagnaRide smooth, like it's not a magic carpet, but does it feel like you're hurting the thing or?
Only in the most aggressive whoopsies, as you call them, like okay. Which I was going way faster than I think most people would, just to, you know, push the limits. See. And there were moments where it felt kind of like, oh, that may have been bump stops, and oh, I may have bottomed out there, not really sure. Right. But in general, it rode really quite well, and there was little bits of the course that had, you know, a bunch of small rocks that you're kind of driving over, and then other parts that were just pure sand with little rocks hidden in the middle, and I just wasn't really too afraid. Whereas if I had gone out there with a limited, the limited probably could still do a lot of it, but the slight bit of ground clearance helped, and also the just having a thinner tire with a bigger wheel, I know it looks good, but I actually don't prefer that route because then you just have a higher chance of puncture, and also it's a worse ride.
Right. Speaking of road clearance, do you know what the clearance is on this offhand?
I think it was 6.7 inches up from 6.1. Or okay. Am I? Okay. Yeah, I have my notes here.
Okay, oh, it wasn't no, over so 7 inches.
It's 7 inches exactly up from 6.1. So
it is
a substantial nearly 1 inch lift, but it's still over an inch less ground clearance than Subaru Solterra for those who are comparing. But it's also more ground clearance than Mach-E. Notably, the Mach-E Rally didn't really add much ground clearance, but it's possible because maybe they lifted it, but then added the underbody shielding to protect the motors, which means that could offset some of that. But it would still improve the breakover angle. It just, the technical ground clearance number wouldn't really change much in that regard.
Right on.
Cool. Looks good. Talking of refreshed models, by the way, you got to drive the refreshed Tesla Model Y. A drive. Now, Kyle put his great walk-around video about the new Model Y up online a few weeks ago, but these are the first driving impressions video, and it's really important because there's a lot that's changed. There's a new suspension setup on this, so we're looking forward to hearing your thoughts on that, but also this is more than, whereas the original Model Y was perhaps a slightly raised Model 3. This is a bit more of an engineering overhaul. So it's not just the suspension we want to hear about, but now you got to drive it. But hey, only 15 minutes? What's that all about?
Yeah, that was a bit frustrating. And part of that was just Tesla's system and how they have it set up. You know, we tried to schedule the first one of the day just in case we could get there early and get in early. That wasn't the case. They wouldn't open the door until right when they opened. And then they said, okay, do you have your Tesla app? And I was like, yes. And they're like, is the car in there? And I was like, no. And what happened was Kyle signed me up for this test drive because he got the email invite, and he didn't use the same email that I use for my Tesla account, which means I wasn't able to use the phone as a key experience, which is a whole new thing with these new Model Y test drives. That's a big deal. I think that's almost, I don't know if it's as big of a deal as the new Model Y, but that was pretty, that was surprising. A nice surprise that I didn't get to endure and enjoy, but my colleague Colton over at Aspect Detailing did. He also test drove it yesterday and had the perfect phone as a key experience. But for me, that ate up a few minutes of the drive, which I didn't know they were eating up minutes of my drive. Like, they were trying to get this set up and get me a key. And then walking 5 minutes through this mall to get to the parking garage, and then they give me the car, and he's like, okay, so now you have 20 minutes, or actually 19 minutes, and that includes getting the car back and walking back to Tesla, which is just like,
jeez.
Okay, I guess we'll just fly through this. So I didn't do any sort of walk around. I mean, there wasn't really much of a need to, because of Kyle's very thorough one-hour walk around. So I just kind of jumped in, set my settings up, and went straight into drive. And within 4 seconds, I hit button on the steering wheel for a turn signal and realized, oh yeah, this has a stock. So that was a really quick first impression is people who have the new Model 3 and new Model Y as a two-car solution will be very confused going back and forth, assuming they're doing the driving and not letting FSD do everything, because the steering wheel experience as far as buttons go is just all completely different, which is very interesting. And that is like a brief glimpse into how different those cars do kind of appear, first of all, visually, but also feel. Like they do actually feel like two different models, whereas, Martin, you're right, the outgoing Model Y really did just feel and look like the outgoing Model 3, just swollen from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of we can see you're pulling away now for audience that are watching the podcast. What kind of experience did you have in order to test that new suspension? Because it for some people, it was so crashy and so hard, it would have been a deal breaker. For those that wanted to waft around, this wasn't the car for them. But what have they done engineering-wise to sort out that ride?
It's just re-engineered some of the, I guess, kinetics telemetry of the suspension to make it, I think, just handle everything better. Like the old one did feel like it was Model 3-ish suspension with a slightly bigger, taller, heavier car. Not drastically heavier or bigger, but it's just that much difference maybe made more effect than they expected. That's my theory anyways. So having a more ground up approach to the suspension on this, I'm sure they took notes from Model 3 refresh, the Highland, because I think that was such a huge deal with how much better the new Model 3 rode than the old one. That's partially why I got one, because it was just night and day, felt like a different car completely. Didn't feel like the mid-cycle refresh for the Ioniq 5. Technically, they changed the front and rear fascia a little bit and changed some other things that people wanted, but didn't change the ride at all. Granted, the ride wasn't bad, but I think some people had complaints in the Model 3 and Model Y first gen as far as ride quality. It was still an engaging ride, but I wouldn't necessarily say comfortable. And some of the issues with the outgoing Model Y included a bit less control in the rear suspension going over certain bumps and a boomy effect if you went over certain bumps or even just had certain frequencies in the audio system. Like it just felt like it wasn't totally engineered for NVH. It was engineered for pretty good efficiency, pretty good driving dynamics. Like they did make it drive a bit like a sporty car, but it didn't like waft down the road nicely. This one really felt like it took a step above, and I guess the equivalent I gave in the video is this just felt a bit more like German engineered in a way. Like if you get in an X3 or a SQ5 and it's just like, wow, this feels like it rides pretty nice. This just felt like it had that amount of pedigree. And I was pretty floored between the ride comfort and also the added sound isolation from the acoustic glass. All the glass, I think, is acoustically laminated now. And whatever improvements they did with the rear end, it is, of course, a rear hatch redesign. Maybe that affected some of the acoustics in the cabin. Whatever they've done worked kind of a lot of the same magic that was done with the first Model 3 update. So I was pretty floored. This is a hard video to make because 15 minutes, I usually like to spend some time with the car, assess my thoughts, then film a video. I'm not as good as off the cuff as Kyle is. I'm hoping to work on that. But it was just like hard to talk about because I was like, wait, this is just great. I can't just say this is great and move on because that's not very interesting or engaging. So it's like trying to analyze what was actually happening in the moment. And it went from like, I was fine with the old Model Y. It was okay. Like fairly easy to recommend if people wanted, you know, the charging infrastructure and everything before Tesla opened up to the other automakers. But now it feels like, oh, instead of talking people into it because of the infrastructure and the software and the app experience, but the car itself was just a microwave on wheels, this actually felt more like a good car.
Did they talk about the stalks? Because I think it's an uncomfortable truth that probably more buyers want them than don't. Did the press release or the words a few weeks ago were, well, this is a family car and having the stork is there, you know, is better. Was that addressed again in the materials you were given? Did they talk about it, even allude to it? Was it just not mentioned? Because companies don't like to admit they've made a mistake, but this was probably a step too far. And you absolutely retrain your brain. And if you're into driving an EV and you want the new Tesla Model 3, it's absolutely worth retraining your brain because it's just a small part of the experience. But for people like my wife who use cars as transport, if I were to say, well, the storks are gone, so now she'd be like, no, we're not buying that car because it's a different use case for her. It's what doesn't what she use a, you know, a vehicle for. Did they talk about that? And did you even bring it up with them? Is it a sensitive subject? Because they've clearly walked back on this. And there was news this week from, well, I saw it on the website, Not a Tesla App, which is really good with this kind of stuff, quoting a senior source saying that they're going to put the stork back in the Model 3 as well. So I don't want to blow it up into too big a deal, but in a kind of way, it is a bigger deal in that have they listened to customer feedback?
I think they have, because that does seem to be the general reaction. I'm probably in the hot take camp where I actually prefer the buttons on the steering wheel now that I've driven thousands of miles in each Tesla variant, the old 3 and the old Y plus the new 3. Now I've touched the new Y. I prefer the steering wheel effect, but I do understand the claims, especially from my European colleagues where there's a lot more roundabouts, that it is easier for the stock to be in a static place. Whereas for me, a lot of times my hands are right on the wheel, so it's just an easy button press rather than fishing for the stock wherever it is. Granted, this stock seems to be in a great location. I've had complaints with, I guess, Lucid specifically recently, where the stock is just too far away and has too much of a throw and doesn't feel that nice. This one didn't feel that nice. It feels cheap. That's been a comment from a few people who have driven it. I think it's fine. It's light. It's easily flickable. And it's different in the approach that it doesn't have the double click situation. So you can't go from, like, you can't tap it versus do a full pull, and you can't go from left to right. If you tap the stock once, that turns the turn signal on. If you tap it again, either direction, that'll turn the turn signal off. Of course, it auto cancels with lane changes and everything like it has for a while now. But my hot take was that I prefer the steering wheel. I think they added the back on the wrong stock. I really wish I had a stock for selecting drive and reverse and park. I hate the screen controls. I know you can get used to it. Of course, I'm used to it, but it's still annoying to me every time. And of course, Tesla has auto shift from reverse to drive and all that stuff. That works half the time. And I always give it the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, okay, I'm setting you up for perfect, clear, obvious choice here. And it just chooses the wrong thing, or it just doesn't choose anything at all. So it's like, it really doesn't always know what I want. And I think, but I don't know. I think I'm in the minority camp. Most people prefer the stock, and I totally understand that. And I think you could also get used to it, but it is annoying and a bummer for the people who have two car households like Model 3 and Model Y, or Colton, my colleague, said like people have a Cybertruck and the Model Y, which is a common combo. Totally different experience. I will say Cybertruck has better buttons than the Model 3 because they're clickable. The Model 3 still has the haptic buttons, better than the S and X, but not as good as a Cybertruck.
And that's one of the biggest problems that I have with the buttons, Jordan, is I'm always driving multiple vehicles. And when I borrow or get a loan on a Tesla, Cybertruck or something with the buttons for a while, I get used to it. Get that. I still don't prefer it, but I'm kind of ambivalent. Like, okay, it's there and I can use it. But it's fine if I just drive that vehicle for like a week. Yeah. But that never happens with me. I'm always mixing things up. And there's a lot of people with two vehicle households. And you even mentioned two Tesla vehicle households, one with stock, one without. And, it does annoy me when I'm driving. And like a blinker should be something that you don't have to even think about. It's just like muscle memory, you know. And I've found that, and maybe I'm just old, that it forced me to think when I was going vehicle to vehicle. And that, I guess, detracted from the driving experience. When I had to now change my habit or rethink how I drive the car every time I get in, when I'm going back and forth. Maybe if I owned one for many months, my brain would understand, like, okay, you're in the car with the stalk now, and you're in the car with the buttons now, and it would just wire it that way, and I wouldn't have to think about it. But I've never gotten to the point, and I've been driving these, you know, vehicles for a long time now, back and forth, where I felt comfortable switching vehicles. And you know, there's so many different things that you have to consider with a vehicle, and so many aspects of that improve or detract from your driving experience. That seemed like it was like a like an unforced error. Like, there wasn't a problem with stalks. And now, you know, yes, the buttons work, but it's creating a problem that we didn't have before. That's my take on it. It's either like, okay, all the automakers sign a pact, we're going to go to buttons, and all the vehicles will be buttons. I think that wouldn't be a problem, but like, that's not going to happen. There's always going to be one or the other. And I don't think, at least the way my brain works, in that fraction of a second where I just need to do something quick, like I don't want to have to think like, oh yeah, I'm in this car, you know, press a button or grab the stalk.
Yeah, I got quickly used to it because someone pointed out if you're flipping the blinker up, you're going right, and it's the same strategy on the steering wheel. The up one is right, the bottom one's down. If you're putting the blinker down, then you're going to the left. So that's how I quickly associated memory with it. Cybertruck is objectively a better version, A, because it has better buttons, and B, because it is steer by wire. So you're not having to do the steering wheel over and over again. When the steering wheel is upside down, you're like, okay, where's the buttons now? It's reversed. So that I accept it more on Cybertruck, but I do agree with everyone who's pointing out the roundabout situation. That's frustrating. You should be signaling when you leave a roundabout. It's funny because FSD rarely does that, but I guess a lot of humans rarely do that, and it is trained on humans, so that logic makes sense. But I thought it was fine. I think I just hope they figure out a direction, because people are going to really get confused if, like, whatever next Tesla car comes out, what if they have both stocks back on that, because they realize people are still complaining about the drive selector. And it feels like I akined it to Apple circa 2016 initially, then 2021, when they removed all the ports. They just made everyone go USB-C on their MacBooks, and they're like, this is better. And everyone's like, no, it's not. And then they added all the ports back in. They're like, we're doing this for you because this is what you want. And it's like, okay, you are making the audience happy, but you first made them mad to then make them happy. So
very true. Yeah. I hadn't thought about your point about your mental capacity when driving. I hadn't fully considered that as well, in terms of getting used to new things. Reminds me of when you, I don't know if you watch Formula One and you hear the drivers talking, it's like they're just, you know, in a bar having a chat with a mate, and that they're doing 200 miles an hour. Or I mean, if you've ever been driven by a racing driver, they're doing speeds and they have talent that would, it's far beyond what I could do. But even if I was driving that fast, I'd be like, no one talk. And like, if you get driven around a track by a racing driver, which I've been lucky enough to experience, like, they're normally just chatting away. They'll be like, yeah, well, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're sort of doing all the things because that's just what they're trained to do. Their brain works at a different speed. But you don't want, when you get on a public highway with an average driver like me, you don't want to have to be thinking about anything. And that includes indicating and where you're going and stuff like that. So I hadn't considered that, what do you call it, cognitive load side of it. Hey, there you go.
Yeah, whereas it was just a reflex with the stalks. You know, we've all driven a long time. You don't think like, really, like, I'm going to put my stalk on now. It just kind of happens because you know you're going that way and your hand just goes there. So that's what a remedial task like that, like putting the blinker on, you don't want it to have to occupy much brain power because you've got other things that you're doing. And I just found it like that on many occasions, my hand went in the wrong direction. It went here when I had the buttons, and it went up to the steering wheel when that vehicle had the stalk, when I'm going back and forth. And maybe if I owned the Tesla with the buttons, I would have gotten used to it. But I've had loans like for a week or two. And, you know, after driving it for 2 weeks, you would think you're kind of settled in. But, man, I'd get my other vehicles and I would still be trying to my thumb would be going for the blinker on the steering wheel. So, yeah. You know, I just seemed like I said, like an unforced error. But I know it's a cost saving thing. I don't think it's made to make the vehicle more futuristic. It's purely a cost saving thing for Tesla.
Or a production production thing or a process thing, but it's one thing too many. Talking of the new three, Jordan, how long have you had yours now?
About 3.5 months at this point.
So what do you make of it then? What do you reckon?
Yeah, nearly 6,000 miles. Really, really, really like it. And some things I didn't maybe expect. You know, when I was initially looking at the three, I almost looked at the LFP battery when that was the original standard range rear-wheel drive, which was intriguing. But then they came out with the long-range rear-wheel drive. That's when we featured it in the i90 Surge, and that's when we jumped on getting one of these, this one specifically. And I thought it was just such a good car. Like, the Model 3 was already a car I enjoyed, but I definitely had my complaints about it, especially with just the fit and finish and feel of everything and ride quality and comfort. Like, it felt sporty, but not necessarily comfortable in some cases. This felt like it took comfort to a whole new level. Very light, nimble, easy to drive. And something I don't think I fully recognized before was my colleague Andreas, who you've seen in this video, he has the all-wheel drive one, and we've even realized, like, oh, my steering is a bit lighter than his. Just not having the front motor somehow affects the steering kinetics, and it's just like my car just feels a little bit more nimble and flickable than his. And it's, you know, just having the most range possible. I'm getting easily about 4.5 to 5 miles per kilowatt hour on most of my drives, which is really a crazy number. I mean, I've spent some time with Kyle's Rivian recently, and the lifetime average on that is like 1.3 miles per kilowatt hour. So the amount of energy you're actually using is crazy. I'm hoping to, I keep traveling and I'm so busy, but I'd like to spend a little bit of time at home and live with level one charging for a bit, because this car I think is so efficient that it could actually survive with people who don't have level two charging, who don't want to make trips to the DC fast charger. That's a big deal. That's a crowd I really want to look at for solutions and talk about that, because a lot of people don't mention the people who can't get an EV because they don't have a functional way to charge, especially in California where the DC fast chargers seem to have lines. Not a big deal here because there's never a line when I go charge, but in California, that's where my mind's really gone. But this thing's been great. Took a road trip in it. I actually took it camping 2 nights ago, which will be an upcoming video. And that was a lot of fun, taking it in really pretty bitter cold weather and just seeing how much energy I burned, of course, to pack voltage and temperature throughout. Like, the most nerdy camping session I've ever done, that's for sure.
Yeah. What's right? Okay, so firstly, I thought the white balance was off on this the first shot. What's the color that you've wrapped it in?
Yeah, that was a new development. This is a brand new color from the Avery Dennison wrap company, whatever they are, called Satin Jade. So it's similar to the existing pistachio color, but satin, so not glossy, not matte, somewhere kind of in between. And as soon as we were looking at wrapping it with Test Bros, and right when I started talking about that, this color came out, and I was like, that's
fantastic.
The one.
That's a gorgeous color. It's so striking, without being striking, if that makes sense. So
yeah. And it's new, and no one has it, which is hard to do, because it seems like everyone and their mother gets a Tesla and then wraps it. So it's hard to have something that does stand out a bit. And I had a lot of fun with, even while we were wrapping it, you know, using a dual motor badge on the back and then just taking off three letters. So it says A motor, which just felt like a funny, correct label for my rear wheel drive. And my license plate, FSD-ish, is definitely speaking to the fact that FSD is not ready to replace a human driver. It's getting there, but it's just, I wanted to stand out a little bit from all the, there's definitely some Tesla super fans that are like, it's ready, we're done. And I'd say it's more impressive than I ever expected. I did not expect to want to use FSD all the time. Mm-hmm. I really do, but there are you can't take your attention off yet, because there are just silly things it'll do. Even today, driving in the snow, I spent part of it driving myself, having a blast, part of it letting FSD do its thing. Technically, it was doing pretty well, but like, just cases where it's like, okay, the obvious safe choice right here is driving in someone else's tracks, and it just kept going into the deeper snow, which is technically more into the lane, but like, you don't want to use lane logic necessarily when you're on a road that, you know, is weirdly snow covered in parts. It's just a whole weird thing.
Right.
Absolutely. And yeah, people have recognized your license plate, which is great. Thank you for spotting that in the comments. And also, eagle-eyed viewers will have seen you doing the old reach around there and touching a button on the screen. And so do you think that people are using the sort of enhanced sexy buttons, because they do a stalk as well, in lieu of not having a stalk on some of those? I mean, if Tesla put the stalk back on the 3, does it put those businesses out of business? Or do they do sort of the... I don't know a lot about the sort of sexy buttons, add-ons and stuff like that. Do they do enough to justify, if Tesla do go back to native stalks, they've got other stuff that you would still have that kind of sexy buttons technology for? And what do you use it for?
I have them routed to various things like opening the glove box, turning on climate control, enabling dog mode. I have one to turn on drift mode, one to disable regen completely, one to... I do have one button just triggering drive in reverse, so I'm using that in lieu of a stalk, I suppose. And then one to disable the mirror tilting down, because sometimes I'm reversing and don't want the mirrors to tilt down. And instead of going into the settings, just tap the button. So it is a very convenient and, I think, fun way to fiddle with your car that's otherwise critiqued as the too far simplified vehicle. So I thought it was pretty fun. Plus, the Commander itself, that the buttons interface through the car with, has a bunch of other controls. So now I have the ambient lighting. If I turn my turn signal on, someone's in my blind spot, my door ambient lighting of that direction turns red and flashes if someone's in the blind spot. I have it set to where if the FSD is, you know, if I'm looking down at the screen or something and it starts flashing blue to pay attention, the whole LED strip does that. Just a few interesting pieces. Oh, and I have manual battery preconditioning now by using sexy buttons, which is fun. So especially if I'm going to charge at a CCS charger and the Tesla doesn't recognize that yet.
That's cool, man. It's nice.
And there's a knob that I don't have that I kind of want to get to try out. And the stocks is a brand new addition, so haven't really seen them rolled out yet. But it's funny now that they're rolling out right as the Model Y hits the shelves, for lack of a better term. So I'm hoping to try out the stocks, because my understanding is they may do things beyond just what the normal stocks would do. It is a customization level beyond what Tesla would allow you.
Yeah, it looks good. So Enhance are a new sponsor on the Norwegian YouTuber Tesla Bjørn or Bjørn Newland. And so all I've seen of these buttons, I'm not a Tesla driver myself or haven't tried them, but he's been in Thailand back with family for the last couple of months or so over the new year. And like, he was getting higher cars or higher Teslas and, you know, like pulling plastic bits of bodywork off and panels inside the door and attaching the different plugs that have to be plugged in when you plug it into the car's wiring loom. And I'm like, dude, that's a higher car, but he takes it, you know, retrofits it all at the end and stuff, and or takes it all out.
It's very easy to add and remove. We did it with the Model 3 that we did in the i90 Surge, because it's just, yeah, you just plug, it's just like splicing in between the CAN reading, so it's like not really, there's no wire cutting, it's just like trim tool, pop off plastic, insert this, put it back on. Couple of minutes, yeah, not bad.
It looks good. And having them out of sight on the back of the screen, like, you know where they are, you can feel your way around. They are buttons, they're not a haptic. Yeah, shock horror, buttons in a car. You can keep your eyes on the road.
I don't think they're pretty. I don't think they look that great.
You've got a good location for them. I liked hiding them.
There's a lot of photos on their website of people putting them, you know, all over the dash. And, you know, technically that could work. I just don't think they look that good for that purpose.
So this is kind of amazing, because I don't mind not having buttons in my car, but this unlocks functions that my car doesn't have, right? So I could, you know, basically I have a rear-wheel drive Model 3, and it'd be nice to turn off ESC sometimes every once in a while, you know, if I, you know, my tires are ready to be replaced and I want to, you know, smoke up the ones that are there. That could be, you know, whatever. So what's the name of the company that makes these, and how much do they cost?
Enhance Auto. I'm not sure of the current pricing. I think it was maybe it might be 300 for the Commander plus the buttons, or 250 or something like that.
Okay.
Buttons themselves might be, yeah, nothing too crazy. I think they're fantastic. Not always perfect. Like, occasionally you'll hit a button and like, okay, that press didn't register, I guess I'll hit it again and then it works. So it's not quite the like insanely flawless integration, but in general seems to work really, really well. Hoping to catch Bjorn sometime if I can get over there and nerd out with him on how his setup is. But it is a fun way to add flexibility. A lot of people critique Tesla, similar to how you critique an iPhone with like, okay, it doesn't give me as much flexibility as my Android. I'm not interested. This is a way to, kind of like back in the day when we jailbroke an iPhone, this feels along those lines of thinking.
Yeah. Oh, it's his new sponsor on the channel, so the last couple of months at least. So, yeah, head over when you come over, and there may or may not be some big road trips coming up that would take you close to him. I'm sure he would do that for his sponsor to get a bit more attention and eyeballs on them. Yeah, they look cool. They look good.
Just one last question, Jordan. Do you know if they are doing this for any other EVs? Because a lot of EVs come with like no buttons or a few buttons, and you know people are always complaining about that.
To my knowledge, it's only Tesla, and they haven't even done Cybertruck yet. They're still cracking the code, or
okay.
I don't know what the right term is there, but still right. figuring out Cybertruck, which technically these buttons' design language speaks most to Cybertruck. They're very angular and weird, jagged-looking, so that they would look better, more normal maybe in a Cybertruck. But nothing with other EVs that I know of, but I agree with you. That's something that a lot of people wish would be less of a trend, this whole buttonless situation. And that's something we glossed over, I guess, with the Ioniq 5. They added back in physical buttons for seat heating and ventilation and steering wheel, and people were over the moon about that. So that's an interesting case where an automaker added buttons after removing them, which we haven't really seen much of.
I will take another quick break now. Seems a good place to take a short pause. If you're listening to the audio version of this, a quick ad or two to help support the podcast and get it on the air, and back in a mo. All right, so welcome back to the Batteries Included podcast. Now, Tom, when you sent us a video on our group chat, a picture rather on our group chat of something looking very burnt, I was very worried that it was...
Hey guys,
It was the State of Charge garage, but it wasn't. We just heard you. We've muted the sound for a second. Posting on Blue Sky of you jumping on a plane to help one of your viewers because they had a bit of a smoky moment with their charger. What's gone wrong here? And what are you doing with your channel to help people who have issues?
Okay, so you may have seen on two other occasions, I flew to somebody's house that had a charging situation that was a problem. Like they either had wires burned or their charger failed, or the outlet failed. And I have a series, it's called Recharge Rescue, where I go and save people that have a charging nightmare, let's say. So this was a young lady that lives in Ohio, and she posted pictures in the Mach-E group. She has a Mach-E of her charger, which was a plug-in Grizzly unit. And the plug, you really can't see from this picture, but the picture she posted just was from the outside of the outlet. Like, she obviously didn't open it up. The plug was all melted. The wire was melted. And she was just like, you know, hey, I've got a problem here. What do I, you know, I really have no idea what to do. So I messaged her and I said, look, sorry to see your problem, but if you'd like, I will come to your house. I'll fix all your wiring, whatever's burned up. We'll pull the wire. We'll replace everything. And I'll bring you a brand new charger, all for free. You don't have to pay a penny. And she was like, you're a scammer.
What's going on here?
Exactly. Like, you know, no, I don't want you in my house. You know, her initial reaction was like, you know, this is not right. But I directed her to some of my videos and said, look, just take a look. This is what I kind of do. And I'll, no strings attached. I'll fix whatever your problem is, even if I've got to pull wires all the way to the fuse panel and completely rewire everything, but I'll have a licensed electrician come and do it. And I'll give you a free charger to boot. So she agreed to do it. And that was last week. So I try to get it done within 10 days because I know it's difficult when you don't have the ability to charge. And she's a single mom and she was going to DC fast chargers. She has a 70-mile commute every day. So she had to stop at DC fast chargers a lot we're going through a cold streak now here in New Jersey, but up in by Cleveland, Ohio. So, you know, it's down to 0 degrees Fahrenheit almost every night. Her Mach-E's battery's cold soaked. the car was only taking in 40 or 50 kilowatts. He's sitting at a DC fast charger for an hour just to get, you know, enough juice to get home. It was a real mess. So I tried to get it going as quickly as I did. And I did it 9 days from the time I emailed her. It was done. So yesterday was the day I flew into Cleveland. I got there at like 6 or 7 in the morning. It was snowing. I thought we were going to skid off the runway. It was not the best conditions to land in, but there were no problems. Fixed the unit. I'm going to have a video up on it next week. We replaced everything that was a problem. United Chargers donated a Grizzly Ultimate 48 amp charger. So we got to give our sponsor here a plug. They, you know, Gleb, you know, you guys have seen Gleb. We've had him on here a couple of times. Mm-hmm. He kind of has a standing order. He's told me, Tom, whenever you go to fix somebody's charger that has a problem, it's burned, their outlet's burned, the charger failed, whatever, you don't have to ask. Just shoot me an email, give me the address, and we'll send them one for free, which is a really nice thing to do, you know? So, I mean, he gets some exposure like this. We're talking about him, but, you know, and my video is going to, I'll talk about that too, but it, you know, that's just the kind of guy that Gleb is. He's a good guy. So, yeah, that video will be up probably in 3 or 4 days, the full start to finish, of that video. Oh God, I should show you now. Wait for the video. I brought the outlet home with me.
Wow.
The one that you saw in that picture. Yeah. So, you know, and it was melted pretty badly. It was just another case of a bad installation. The electrician did a bad job with the install, and on top of it used an inferior outlet. But I found multiple things wrong with the installation, all the way back to the wrong circuit breaker was used in their service panel. So, I mean, there were multiple problems with this installation. She's lucky she didn't have a worse problem.
And that's a single mom relying on a professional to do a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So someone mentioned our mics are kind of unbalanced. Sorry about that. We've been trying behind the scenes like to get them all kind of the same.
They should all.
Every week. Maxed out.
I almost think at this point, if you're a viewer here, you have to accept that our mics are going to be unbalanced. I'm sorry. It's just the way it's going to be.
It is, yeah. We can never seem to get it right. Well, the platform's meant to fix it. And
yeah, we got to get on the other platform. I need to figure that out. I'm sorry, guys. That's on me.
We're working on it. Hey, now, Dom, I know that you pay attention to not only the EVs, but the EV companies more than most, actually. You quite like talking about sort of the performance behind the vehicles as well and the companies that make the cars. And case in point, yesterday, Rivian revealed their 2024 Q4 financials for the first time, a gross profit of $170 million. Of course, it was a net loss for the fourth quarter of $743 million, but that's a good deal better than the same period last year at a $1.5 billion loss. A huge quarter for the American EV maker. A joint venture deal with Volkswagen, a loan from the government, and both to build a new factory. Of course, that'll be paid back, but between them is $10 billion in capital. Looking ahead, Rivian saying the midsize SUV, the R2, is on track for 2026 production. It'll have to shut down production at its one operating factory for a month to prepare paint shop and things like that for R2. It means its total vehicles manufactured this year will be lower than the 50,000 level that we had in 2024, but they expect to achieve another modest gross profit for the entire year of 2025. RJ on the call talking about hands-free driver assistance coming for the Gen 2 R1 vehicles. Loads of cameras on those and 5 advanced radars and even an eyes-off version next year as well. So software has always been very, very strong with Rivian. The ADAS systems are being developed. It's one of the reasons why Volkswagen want to do that joint venture with them as well. Dom, I know you paid a lot of attention to it this week. What did you make of Rivian's results and what they talked about?
I mean, it was good to see. It was pretty much in line with what they've been saying. Like this whole year, they predicted for 2024 that they would put out like 50,000 cars, and they delivered a little bit less than they delivered a bit more than that. They manufactured a bit less than that because they had some in inventory, carried over from the last period. But this is a great result. I mean, doing what you say you're going to do. I think is confidence boosting. I don't think it really affected the stock price too much. I think at the earnings call, I mean, it was pretty much expected that they were going to do this, I guess. But they did beat the beat the street, as they say. You know, they had a slight better result than everyone on the outside was kind of expecting. But they did also put up warning signs about this year coming up. It's not going to be. They expect to have less production, They do expect to be like profit or net or gross profitable for the whole year of 2025. But there's a just because they have the R2 and the R2 still coming out in 2026, so that's really great. There's a lot riding on the R2, right? It's going to be a much higher volume vehicle, and that's should really help swing that turn that hopefully the gross profit into a net profit. You know, after about a year of R2, be nice to see. But the warning is that this year in 2025, for about a month in the second half of the year, they're going to have to shut the whole normal factory down, which is the only factory they have at the moment. They're building another one in Georgia, but that's, you know, waiting on money. It's a little more complicated than that, but yeah, so they're going to have to shut the normal factory down to set up the paint plant, the paint shop they have at Normal. So it'll take cars, the R2 lines, and all the other lines will feed into. They have to shut down all the production in order to kind of do this for whatever reason. So, So production is going to be a little bit lower, but they're doing a lot of, they've been very successful in their cost cutting, and they expect to have, you know, again, a gross profit again for all of 2025, which is, you know, really great. I mean, that's a huge differences, and it really make a difference. I think in the last year, people were saying they lose $30,000 on every vehicle they make. How, you know, maybe they need to stop making vehicles, because the more you make, the more in debt you go. But that's not really how that metric works. So I'm not sure what the number is now for how much money they lose per vehicle. Maybe it's 10,000 or something, but that number is getting better, and it should, if everything keeps going smoothly, unless there's some, you know, big force measure, as they say in the financial industry. Things are looking really good for it. And this ADAS thing, though, kind of took everyone and me by surprise. I didn't really expect eyes off in 2026, like hands off in 2025, which, you know, I hate that hands off expression. I don't really think you should take your hands off even on cars that are hands off, because sometimes I've had cars like they're great hands off for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden it wanted to, you know, just take me into the other lane, like the oncoming lane. Anyway, that aside, eyes off. I don't really have confidence that they're going to be able to do eyes off. I mean, ADAS is hard. That kind of level of ADAS is hard. And like Stellantis is thinking about doing that. They announced this week that they also have an ADAS level. They say level 3, I think, hands off, eyes off system coming, at least up to at speeds up to like 35 miles an hour. So similar to what Mercedes is doing in California. They have a hands off, eyes off system, but only up to certain speeds and only on certain highways. Anyway, it's a big ask to get that kind of ADAS system going. So they do say they have like 5 advanced radars and lots of cameras. So I don't know. But Jordan, do you have any thoughts on the? You spent a lot of time. You know what the current ADAS system is like in the Rivian.
Yeah, it's good when it works, but the real limitation is the pre-mapping requirement on highways, because a lot of construction zones can really throw that off. There's been theories of maybe there was related to satellite connectivity as well to get the mapping data, but I've had consistent trucks just turning it off for me because it couldn't get the mapping figured out on areas where it had perfect connectivity, like 4 full bars of LTE. So I don't think it's a connectivity thing. I think it's just a limitation of pre-mapping. I see that with a lot of cars I test in our ADAS testing. So I'm excited that they have said that they'll be not reduced to pre-mapped highways by the end of the year. They'll also, the hands-free, I'm excited to see. I mean, as you said, you want to be cautious with that, but that does show progress. Eyes off will be, the fact that they're where they are now and then saying eyes off next year feels like a bit of a stretch, but I guess we'll see. I'm personally really excited for R2 and R3 and R3X. It's such a bummer that those are not releasing this year, because I think new model Y is coming out. It's a huge deal. It's an insanely good car, but there's a lot of reasons people don't want to touch Tesla right now, and I'd like to see better alternatives. There's a lot of other cars I would never consider over Tesla because I have such a heavyweight a need on really good software and app connectivity, and a lot of other cars struggle with that. Rivian notably doesn't. It has a great app, great software, and R1 is still too expensive. A lot of the comments have made this comment. It's just, it's an expensive vehicle. It's a great vehicle, but it's a lot of money. So R2 can't come soon enough. Even my girlfriend is looking at, you know, EV after her 4Runner is, well, not really done. It's a newer 4Runner, but she's been experiencing some EVs alongside me, and she has her eyes on maybe R2. So we'll have to see how that rolls out, when it rolls out, what will the issues be, if anything. I mean, interestingly, I think early R1s were really quite good. Some later R1s had some more issues, which is the reverse of what we usually see, at least the ones I've experienced. So I'm hoping they have everything sorted. We still have our complaints with Rivian software, the ADAS, but if that's all figured out with R2, which really does feel second gen, then I'm beyond excited. I mean, their brand is notably in good standing with a lot of people. They don't have anything really controversial floating around. Like, it's intriguing for a lot of people, and we've had a lot of people in the comments recently. Just, I mean, it's hard because Tesla's in the news a lot lately, but we have a lot of comments on our videos saying, why won't you talk about something else? And it's like, well, there's not a lot else in some regards, because there's not, like, Model Y is a huge car and it's coming out right now. Rivian is notably entering what feels like a quieter year. There's no new vehicles launching this year. Maybe they'll announce something new, but that feels a bit ahead of the curve because they haven't rolled out R2 or R3 or R3X. So it feels like they'd be piling on this already theoretical list at this point, because until it comes out, it kind of is theoretical. So I'm curious to see what else Rivian does this year besides the Dune announcement this week, which was underwhelming for a lot of people.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they had this new edition of the Tri-Motor R1 vehicles called Dune. It gives you the regular 329 miles of EPA, 2.9 seconds 0-60, a new Dune color with a dark out package, different wheels, all-terrain package that includes some underbody shielding, new interior, and recovery boards to help you out of a truck stuck situation. Just check I said the right thing there. Yeah. Not going to get in trouble. And for the same price as the regular Tri-Motor. Which is a lot of money. It's $106,000 US for the R1S, $99,900 for the R1T. It's a limited release, so if you want it, be quick. But I don't know, Tom, you put your money where your mouth is, as it were, and spent your money on a Rivian. Is this enough to tempt you out and update yourself to a Gen 2?
I don't live too close enough to deserts or beaches to go driving on. The beaches here in New Jersey don't, most of you're not allowed to drive on them, so it's not really doing it for me. I think it's a cool vehicle. I like that Rivian's doing this, like, you know, small run of this, I guess, but I would imagine it's not going to be a widely optioned vehicle. Like, a lot of people aren't going to get these. It's cool, it's a good variant, you know, but not really going to tempt me.
Yeah, I think I love, like I said, these wheels. I love this wheel design. I like light-colored wheels. I don't think they'll sell well because they show dirt, but I think they look incredibly cool, and if you do keep your car clean, it's a clean look. And this color looks fantastic. I got to check this out in the showroom here in Denver at the Rivian Space, and I'm a huge fan. I'm maybe surprised that it's limited to 1,000, but maybe after that initial run of this edition is done, maybe they'll just add these things to the configurator, because I do think people will love these wheels. They look great in both colors. I think people like the paint color. I mean, it's like every time Rivian teases a new color, everyone is like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see it and try it out. So I'm hoping people are intrigued by this, but it is interesting that the price is the same. People were expecting maybe a price premium for a special edition like this, but part of the what didn't make quite the biggest part of the news, of course people are reporting on it, but the interior is the downgraded interior, well, for lack of a better term. It's not the usual Ascend interior associated with Tri-Motor. This is actually more of the Adventure interior, usually a step below that, but that's more rugged and durable, and so that kind of makes sense to me. You can kind of pick your path. Also, a lack of, you know, the Chilliwack floor mats are back, and actually no carpet in the bottom means you can just, it's just like a hard material, still perforated, so you're not like going to risk being slippery and stuff. And I love that. I love a, if you are going to have a Rivian and take it off road, take it on adventures, I love a floor that's not carpet, because it's just so easy to clean, nice and rugged feeling. Reminds me of the approach I think Ford was taking with the Bronco, of like every surface is meant to be wiped down and just, you know, wipe it down and get on your way. So I'm wondering how quickly they're going to sell out of the 1,000 units. It is 1,000 units divided across R1T and R1S and divided across the two different wheel colors. So you could see people saying like, oh, I have, you know, I don't know if they'll release the numbers, but someone could be like, I have one of 187 built in this configuration. Nice. Kind of like we see like Corvette owners do at car shows. So
that looks good.
We'll see. Rivian Tracker, our friend Jose, did note that the quad motor is also launching this year. That slipped my mind. Although I don't know if I'm worried that will not sell super well, because having driven it, I don't know why you would need it beyond the tri-motor, because the new tri-motor is like the previous quad motor with how insanely powerful it is. I guess we'll see what they do.
It must be even more insane though, right?
So it is, but granted I drove it when it was months ago when it was still in tuning, I guess, but it felt almost out of not out of control, but it's just like it's so much power that they're still figuring out how to put that power down. And I think it's just like, it's too much. There's no need for it, but it is silly cool. And if you want the party trick effect, kind of like the Lucid Air Sapphire, or the Plaid, it's like, look how silly fast my truck is. Yay. But you need like stickier tires, which just feels like not trucky to me.
True.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, hey, before we go, I see Jim in the comments saying $100,000 vehicle. Talk about stuff that will cost less than 40. All right. Kia EV4 is next in the news then. Kia EV4 will have its official debut next week. It's the next Kia EV Day. They're going to do it in Spain this time, about 18 months after the last one. So we'll talk more about it when we've got all the details. But what they did surprise us on Sunday night with was two different versions of the Kia EV4. So the press office sent out the pictures to the media. So we get the exterior design, nothing on the interior, but they're going to do a fastback version and a hatchback. But the fastback is slightly longer. It's a bit more extended. And so maybe a bit more boot space. I don't know. And then the hatchback is only going to be sold, I think, for the UK market and the EU market now. For our YouTube viewers and the audience watching, we've got a picture on screen right now of, we're just flicking between them. So the darker grey one is the hatchback, and then that lighter silver colour is the fastback. So it physically is a longer vehicle, but they're not going to sell the fastback, as far as I know, in Europe, because we'll want that form factor of the hatchback. So very interesting. Otherwise, you know, the wheelbase is the same, everything else is the same, but they've actually styled, because obviously the rear is going to be entirely different. It's a different shape. You know, the light clusters and everything is very different. So Kia EV4, what do we know about it? Well, it's got the new Kia face. If you like Kia's styling, then it's all quite cohesive and kind of forming part of that that different Kia family. It's going to be unveiled officially alongside the PV5. That's an electric van for cargo or passengers. So watch out, ID Buzz, because PV5 is coming. We saw it at CES, and it looks pretty good. Not much has changed from the pictures that we saw of that, but maybe the van won't come to the US. Maybe that's a European, South Korean vehicle. But either way, we'll get more details next week at Kia's EV Day. But this is really interesting, because everything that's EV6 and upwards is 800 volt EGMP architecture. And then this, so, you know, 2, 3, 4, I need to check on 5, but is a 400 volt architecture with those cost savings passed on. So wherever Jim is in the comments, then this should be an affordable family vehicle from Kia, who aren't slowing down. In the last few months, maybe the last year or so, you could say that many car companies are rethinking their EV strategy. The numbers that they predicted post-pandemic are not coming to fruition. Some of them are more vocal in terms of wanting regulations changed. The Euro CO2 emissions kicked in this year, which could lead to fines if you don't make either more efficient combustion cars, that's an option, or more plug-in hybrids. Although the European Union are going back this year and looking at the, I think it's called the utility, someone in the comments will know, utility score, the utility something. Anyway, it's how the regulators over here decide how much of a plug-in hybrid should be seen as being charged. And it turns out that a lot of people that have them as company cars never plug them in because they're not paying for the fuel anyway, and it's their home electricity bill. So they're going to redo all that, which the car makers hate as well, because it'll turn out mean that plug-in hybrids get a much lower efficiency score, much higher CO2 score, but that's going to be done this year. So that's good news for the, to be more real world. But whereas Kia, Hyundai, Genesis are not slowing down. They're not lobbying. They're not campaigning to give us a break, let us off the rules. We're going to make more extended range EVs. They're just going full steam ahead with these, and they look really good. I think they have said some things like, well, you know, we are going to focus on making sure we've got a hybrid for those that aren't ready. But not vehicles like this, by the way. So this is very exciting. Launch next week. 27th, is it, Dom? Something like that in Spain. So we'll see more details.
Yeah, next Thursday, I believe. Yeah, so just before the show, so we'll be talking about these things, and like we'll have some details on these vehicles next week. One thing we didn't mention, or I didn't put in the notes, is that they're also going to show the EV2 concept. And I thought I saw something about maybe you saw something about this EV5 concept.
Possibly.
I just saw a mention of it. I didn't see anything official about the EV5 thing. EV2, I think I'd heard something before. So, yeah, I'm still not exactly sure what's going on, but yeah.
Don't get me started on cheap cars. It's my current thing. So I'm really excited about this year. Not that I'm suggesting that all the car makers held back their smaller, cheaper cars in order to sell bigger volumes of EVs, except that's exactly what I'm suggesting. Their profit maximization strategies over the last few years has been big, expensive SUVs. But because of the UK rules, the mandate we've got here, which 28% this year of your fleet has to be zero emission, not quite as simple as that, but it works out that way. And also CO2 in Europe, it means that the car makers are all going, we've got a 20 grand car that we can sell you if you want. And they're all really interesting, like Fiat Grande Pandas and Renault 5s and Dacia Springs and Leapmotor T03s and Citroën EC3s, and as Dom says, Kia EV2s. You know, anything in that 15 to 20 grand price is going to be really interesting. Use case, my friend, use case. They're not going to do 300-400 miles, or they'll do a bigger battery version like the EV3 does, a small battery, big battery version, just to get that entry level price, that headline, that poster, that social media advert that says, you know, from 22 grand. But then you can always go up the specs and up the batteries and stuff. So that's great. And the Koreans are at the heart of this. Where's Ford over here? Ford's always been about, affordable cars, the Fiesta, even the little Puma as well, wasn't always massively expensive. But all we've got is the Explorer, which is not what you would call an Explorer, and the Capri, which is not what we call a Capri, because it's a VW ID5. And they're all really expensive. So, the cheaper Fords are just not there. So they're being left out of the party a bit. But VW are coming as well with ID2s and ID2X, which they announced this week as well. So just call it a Polo, VW, please. Get rid of the ID numbers.
We don't know from Polos over here in the States.
Oh, okay. So give it a number in the US and either call it the ID Up or the ID Polo or the ID Golf, because you've got good nameplates, VW. Don't ruin it with the silly numbers. What should we talk about before we go? No Tesla Cybertruck, because I get the feeling that we've done too much Tesla today. But it had its NHTSA 5-star rating. They crashed the heck out of those, and they're really, really safe. People say, oh, they're, you know, when they launch the Cybertruck, there'll be death traps. This isn't pedestrian safety tests. They're to come. Good luck.
Maybe if they do them in Europe. I'm not sure if they're going to sell in Europe.
No, they won't sell them here. I wouldn't pass them. But actually, if you're inside one, it's a very, very safe place to be. All the different impact tests and stuff. By the way, if you have never read one of these reports, grab yourself, you know, a stiff drink and, you know, sit down in a comfy chair, because there's so many photos and they publish everything, the seat angles and... you can tell I went through it this week and I was like, wow, this is extensive. Cybertruck did exceptionally well. I think it was, you know, a sliver away from being completely 5 stars across the board, which is very good news, which is great. What else happened this week before we go? Oh, Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce announced
a new... speaking of portable cars.
Right, yeah.
Black Badge Spectre, the car that... if you have to ask the price, you can't afford it, my friends. This could be $500,000 when it goes on sale, but no one ever specs a base version. Is there even a base version of this? What they've done is added a load more power, another almost 100 horsepower. They've redone the throttle mapping. It'll do 0 to 60 in about 4 seconds, and it's, you know, it's a boat. They've re-engineered it to minimize the squat and the dive under acceleration and braking. So it's a bit more hard. They've given it launch control. What? So, Jordan, we want to see out of spec. You've done a bunch of Rolls-Royce Spectre stuff, but let's get one of these and, I don't know, do a track day on it or something.
My friend Forrest and I took a Rolls-Royce, I guess it was the Ghost Black Badge, and we took it through like 8 different drive-thrus, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, Arby's, just, you know, typical Rolls-Royce things. I can't wait to experience this Black Badge. But again, I don't really... It feels weird doing a normal video with it. You have to do something absolutely silly, because the amount of people actually using these will be, A, maybe not even driving themselves. But it is funny to me that, like, they say it has infinity mode, which gives you a whopping 659 horsepower. So what does that mean when Sapphire has double the power? Is that, like, infinity times 2? Like, all these marketing terms are wild to me, just what they can call these launch modes and everything. But Jose mentioned fast food ain't cheap anymore. You're right. Some places you do feel like you have to roll up with some class and maybe elevated clothing.
Yeah, I know. When I come over to you guys and get like a burger and fries and it's $20, I'm like, what? Anyway, we don't pay that.
I just want to say, every once in a while, we want to do it every week, if people write us letters, we recommend cars for different people. And sometimes we recommend used cars. So I was just thinking, maybe we should this Rolls-Royce Spectre on our... on a radar, you know, for suggesting for people who want, you know, luxury. It is the ultimate luxury EV, I feel like it is. But there's the current pricing on the used market. There's 45 of them.
There's 45 used ones on cars.com.
That's a lot. That's a lot more used Rolls-Royce Spectres than I would ever imagined. And they looks like, they start at 400,000 basically. Oh, you get this nice. Yeah. A lot of interesting color choices.
Yeah. And everyone's unique. I was reading some Rolls-Royce stats recently, and I think the Spectre, the point that they were making with the Spectre, was for most of the people who buy one, it's not even their first Rolls-Royce.
So
one because Rolls-Royce sell it, which is cool.
Right.
I think it'd be really funny to get one of these, you know, after it's had 6 owners and maybe 50,000 miles, and then you rallyify it. Someone in the comments mentioned that, and I think that's a brilliant idea. Just lift it, throw in some big beefy tires, and talk about the most comfortable experience off-road you can imagine.
I tell you what, in 15 years' time, because owning an old Bentley, an old Rolls-Royce, it's certainly not for the faint of heart, and in terms of when something goes wrong. Because EVs are more reliable, as long as you were prepared for if a big thing goes, it's going to be a hell of a bill. But otherwise, all the stuff that would go wrong in an old barge like this isn't going to go wrong in an EV world. But now I'm casting my mind forward to 2040 and things like that, and the world will be a different place. Before we go, could anybody see this one coming? Nikola, the company that was once worth $30 billion. $1 in the SPAC crazy frenzy, SPAC reverse merger thing, worth more than Ford at one point, Tom. GM placed their future in their hands with the Badger and all sorts of things. And I remember at the time we were doing the podcast on Inside EVs at the time before we did this, and we were all saying, sir, anyone at GM done their due diligence? Because we can all see what's happening with Nikola. We all said the quiet bit out loud, but no one told GM. Hey, fast forward. And this week, Nikola went bankrupt, filed for protection. Trevor Milton is not behind bars. Trevor Milton was found guilty in 2022, I think it was. And I think if you have money, and he does, he's still appealing the decision. So, if you get caught doing one crime, you go straight behind bars, I guess, if you're a certain type of person. If you get caught doing white-collar crime and get done for fraud and found guilty, 3 years later, you're still sitting at home being like, I don't agree with the result. And I guess that's the way the justice system works. But hey, anyway, Nikola. What was interesting, actually, Tom, I don't know if you noticed this, Tom. We'll leave on this story. Is when it was widely reported, I noticed all the headlines were like, you know, troubled EV maker Nikola, EV truck maker Nikola goes bust. Like in my head, they were all about the hydrogen, and they've done some sort of weird pivot in people's minds. Or is there just a general perception in the mainstream media that, they made EVs, let's kick EVs a bit more, which is the current done thing. Yeah. But it was interesting. It was EV maker Nikola. Nothing about hydrogen. That was all long forgotten about. Anyway, it didn't work out for them. Obviously, our thoughts are with the people who work there, the hardworking people that work there, that we look
for
new employment. Yes.
I was just wondering, do you remember that first vehicle they came up with, the Nikola? They had that like off-road dune buggy kind of situation going on. Do you remember? That was a while. That's before the Badger pickup truck.
Before the Badger. And they announced like a jet ski or something. Like Trevor Milton
was
like,
a jet, yeah,
full
yeah.
on like channeling
like, his... throwing stuff at the wall forever. Like his, and then they, you know.
His, like his inner Elon was like, let's just say anything and people... Anyway, then they rolled a truck down a hill and said it was moving and it all unraveled. Tom, we're not surprised, are we?
Is anybody really surprised? You know, and it's a shame because there's good people that work at the company, you know, and, you know, whenever this happens, you know, we can joke and laugh about it, but people get hurt, you know, and there were people working there trying to make this work, but I can't think that it would be hard for me to understand why anybody would be surprised at this point. You know, they did make vehicles, you know, they did make vehicles. It wasn't as if they just never produced anything, but it's extraordinarily difficult to launch a car or truck company. It's just that, the depth of your pockets is just, you know, it's insane. I mean, we look at even Rivian, who's, you know, they made, I don't know how many vehicles Rivian has sold to this point, but quite a bit. And they're really good vehicles, widely accepted as outstanding vehicles. And even they are like, people aren't 100% convinced that they're over the hump, you know, and they're not, you know. So, I mean, it's really hard to start a car company. It takes extraordinarily deep pockets. And I think if you don't start producing, once they started making vehicles, if they didn't just ramp up and start, you know, doubling production and everything, that's the sign that it's just not going to happen. You know, when you start scuffling and you make a few here and you sell some and then nothing happens for a while. I mean, look at Aptera. They've been scuffling for how long? I would love if they can make it, but you know, I don't know at this point. You know, yeah.
Aptera can vote or buy a cigarette. What can you do when you turn 18?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at this point, it's like it's such a shame because it's such a cool concept and so many people love it. But you know, I just don't. You know, I don't really see them taking it to the finish line, Aptera, at this point. Yeah. Nikola used to invite me all the time to come and see their, you know, facility or whatever. And, you know, I would answer with a bunch of questions about, well, you know, what is it like? My whole thing is if there's something new and exciting that you're going to announce or show, then that's one thing. But just to get free press and get a video made out of it, it's not. You know, I wasn't interested. I was waiting for like something big to report on. And now we got the biggest of reporting. They're done. So
they're done.
Yeah.
Yes.
The goose is cooked.
Absolutely. Well, hey, look.
I'm hoping to drive Aptera in May. I'm looking to spend a few days in Southern California. There's a few things to check in on there. If anyone has ideas, let me know, because I'm looking at maybe up to 10 days down there. Looking at technically a range extended electric fire truck in the San Diego fleet. Aptera, yes, of course, is there, and they wanted me to drive it in CES. And well, they said I couldn't drive it. They wanted me to ride along, and I was like, no, I have to drive it. I have to see a car that feels ready-ish. And they keep making YouTube videos. They did a YouTube video last week on their UI, which is intriguing, looks okay, but then a lot of comments are very, very critical, rightly so, because there's a lot of things missing in it, and like maybe they're not getting the point. I don't know. I would love for them to succeed. I like small, efficient vehicles, hence why I'm trying to get over 5 miles per kilowatt-hour in my Tesla, but Aptera would be really interesting, but I don't have my hopes super high. But there's other things down there. I think the island of Catalina has a RAV4 EV fleet that they use to maintain it, so I want to go check those out. So if anyone in the comments has
EV West, have we talked to them for a while, Michael, over there? EV West, Michael Breen.
I haven't.
He's been quiet. I imagine they got to be doing something. They were always so, you know, super busy for the longest time. It'd be nice to give them a ring anyway while you're down there.
Yeah, we have featured Aptera with an interview with the founders on the podcast. Maybe it was on the Batteries Included, maybe in our previous guys, but we occasionally get comments from people saying, oh, why aren't you behind them? Like, well, we've given them more airtime than most startups. And I think it's fair to say we all want them to win.
Yeah.
Like, Nikola was so outrageous nonsense that we just called it out. And Fisker were like, well, here's our first car, but here's our next 25 cars, and we're making them in right-hand drive. And we were like, look, slow down. Let's get the ocean right, because it's not right. And then that all blew up. Whereas Aptera are like, we have this idea that we've had for a really long time, and we'd really like to make it. And they're nice people, and we just want to make it. And they're not wanting to change the world and make tons of, like, here's our next thing. And they've sort of ridden the PR wave a bit with, you know, the sort of NAX socket and stuff and what have you, just to get attention. And I get all that, but like, we'd like them to win. We'd like them to bring the vehicle to market. Scott, thank you so much. Yeah, you can support the show like Scott's done today with a super sticker. Thank you, Scott, my friend. That's really kind of you. Help us get the show on the air. You can watch the YouTube version, watch some ads. You can even listen to the audio version. A couple of ads, I'm sure, floating around that all helps to get this podcast on the air. And, of course, if you want to, you can always go put a Grizzly Charger on your wall, and that would ultimately help support this podcast as well, as they are a fine sponsor of what we do. I think we're done.
Oh, Grizzly.
Oh, yeah.
Grizzly. Right.
I think we're done.
Tune in next time when we hopefully hear from Kyle about the Ioniq 9. That's why he's absent today. He's on a flight back from Korea. And I am very excited. I, of course, went to the Ioniq 9 kind of before it was really unveiled, got to film a walk around of that, but no driving back then. Yeah. And the software didn't even fully function. It was a bit rough around the edges, but a very intriguing vehicle. Felt sort of like EV9 Gen 2, which, of course, EV9 will get a refresh. That should bring it up to par with Ioniq 9. But I'm very excited to see how his road tripping and videos and stuff in Korea turns out. So that should be around the corner here.
Yeah, so EV9 GT was launched in Korea this week with the 99.8.
I forgot to put that in the notes. I meant to do that.
The hot version of that. But, of course, yeah, the Ioniq 9, which is, again, it's not a cookie cutter. It is the three row version, but Hyundai. But it's a bigger battery and it's different. So we'll look forward to what Carl says. And I think it's actually, so that, I mean, it was probably a press drive, Jordan, but I think it's actually on sale, isn't it? It's actually in customers' hands as well in Korea.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we have weird rollout strategy with the EGMP cars, it seems. I mean, notably, the local Hyundai dealer had Hyundai Ioniq 5 2025 for me to play around with and drive and charge, and you saw that charging video I did compared to the Model 3, and that was weeks before the actual official press drive, when there's an embargo of all things to like hide driving impressions. So it was super weird that you could just go to the dealer and literally buy one before the press got their hands on it to make video content about. It's a very interesting thing. We saw that with EV9, so it just seems like they're beating the actual media teams to getting these cars out, which is very different from a lot of other manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we go. Thank you for joining us. As always, Jordan, really appreciate it and your input.
Anytime.
This week, that's the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, leave them on the YouTube version of the show. Best place to put them. And then we can, you know, we'll see them. We can reply to them. You can get in touch. Whilst you're there, if you hit the thumbs up version button on that YouTube version of the show, it helps spread the word to other people in that little thing down the right-hand side that says you might also like, and they get our faces, which is lovely for someone who's never heard of us. But it helps spread the word. And if you hit subscribe and the bell icon, you will never miss a show. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.